Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and life coaches Wendy Dillard and Cindy Chavez sitting in this afternoon. It is Monday, March the 5th, 2018, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, your second daily dose of happy for the day. And we have an exciting little experiment going on today because we have three of us doing this show. This is the first time we've ever had all three or any three of the co-hosts, because there's about six of us total, doing a show at once. So we're breaking ground, ladies. This is a cool thing.
Well, it is exciting. All three of us.
How about that? So let's start the way we normally do with Win. Cindy, you got any exciting stuff going on? Anything fun or happy or joyful or even okay?
Well, I do. And I'm continuing on with my, if you listen to the show that I do with Walt on Tuesday and Wednesday mornings, you know that I had heard someone talking about using prayer beads for affirmations. So as a way of repeating an affirmation and counting along with beads. And so I didn't have any beads. So I looked in my closet and there were a string of Mardi Gras beads because I live down here in Louisiana. So I grabbed those. And the idea was to choose an affirmation and say it 1,000 times a day for 10 days. And so I made sure to pick a really short one because, you know, I'm a real big fan of Neville Goddard and Florence Scovelshin, and some of those affirmations they write are really long and there's no way. Yes. So since Walt and I had just started covering the book Wealth or Money and the Law of Attraction, I decided to choose an affirmation that had to do with wealth. And so I just chose the affirmation, I feel rich. I thought that rich would cover everything, not just money, but just rich in life experience, rich in happiness, and, you know, maybe even money in abundance and having good things in my life. So I started, and a couple of days later, we got a gift certificate in the mail for $50 for one of our favorite and quite expensive restaurants. So that was like really exciting. It's like a $50 gift card. And then things just kept happening. Well, then we had to take the car in to get something looked at. And that was last Thursday. And they gave us a loaner. And they gave us the top of the line car for the loaner. And we thought we'd have to bring it back Friday. And they keep telling us they haven't found the wrong thing yet. So we've had this beautiful Mercedes for 4 days now.
Nice.
And we just keep laughing about it. We keep looking at each other and going, I feel rich. And
yeah.
We went to brunch and we got like the entire parking lot was full, but the front best rock star parking ever was open. Like little things like that have been happening for the past 5 days. And then today I got a text message from a friend that said, oh, I'm dropping some stuff off at your house. But I can't stop, and you probably have a call. So I'm leaving it outside, and I go look outside, and it's like a whole huge garment bag full of beautiful things. I'm like, This is so funny.
Wow.
Wow.
So, y'all, I feel rich.
I could tell.
Yeah, that sounds really juicy. And, you know, when Walt started, he talked on this show about you doing that experiment with the 1,000 a day. And I thought, yeah, that's a nice thing. I think I want to try it. Well, I did it one day for 10, and I did 10 reps. But now after listening to what you've shared, I'm like, okay, I think I'm going to up this because I like the results that you got.
Right? And it's just been fun. You know, of course, I have a willing partner that's chiming in with me, and I don't think he's going for 1,000 a day. He's just repeating me whenever I walk through the room and go, I feel rich. And he says, I feel rich. If
but
nothing
the best
else,
partner,
we're getting a lot of smiles.
Cindy, the best partner you have is Law of Attraction.
Yes, agree.
Very cool. Very, very cool. Wow, that's like a great win right there. I mean, I've been doing the mirror work now for 15 days, and I haven't had any kind of result like that one. But the result that I do have so far after 15 days, I'm like halfway to the goal, right? Because it's like 30 or 40 days that Jack Canfield said. Well, halfway there, I can tell you this negative self-talk has not disappeared. What it has done is faded. It's like at half the volume it was before. So it's not really loud in my head.
What is mirror work? Explain.
Oh, mirror work is where I look in the mirror every morning, first thing, and for a minute or two, I just talk to myself and tell myself, I love you. I appreciate what you're doing. I think you're great. I just, you know, pour all the, anything that comes out of my head in terms of adoring myself, which is not terribly a comfortable thing to do, but I've been learning to do it. And I am very proud to say I have completed 15 days, because when I started, I wasn't sure if I could finish one. And I did. And I finished two. And I finished three. And by the time I got to the fourth one, it was not nearly as uncomfortable as it was on day one. Now, I can't say it's gotten comfortable. It's not there yet. But let's just say when I have to push myself a little bit, oh, yeah, you forgot to do your mirror work today, I don't think twice about it. I just get up and do it. So it's pretty comfortable. I mean, it's almost comfortable. That's, you know, that's progress.
That is progress. Good for you. I'm really impressed that you've hung in there even to 15 days, knowing how uncomfortable it was for you in the beginning. That's a huge, huge kudos to you.
I mean,
well, what do they say about a habit? 21 days?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Some say 21, some say 30, some say 60. So to me, it's however long it takes till you get to what you want.
Until all of a sudden you don't have to remind yourself to do it anymore, because it's just what you do.
Yeah, that would be good. If I can get to that point where I don't even have to think about it and I just do it, that would be good. The one good thing I can say is that of those 15 days, 14 of them, I did manage to do it the first thing. So that was really good.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. That for me especially, because I'm somebody who historically has never been good at affirmations. I mean, affirmations just have never worked for me. I've never felt good doing them. I never enjoyed it. I lost interest after the first 10 seconds. So for me to stick with this for 15 days, this is really something. That alone is a victory.
So what are you focusing on that allows you to stick with it this time?
Negative self-talk disappearing. I mean, seriously, that's my motivation. That's my goal. The idea of clearing that out of my head entirely, oh, wow. I mean, going through an entire day without hearing a single thought going between my ears, I love that concept.
So you have a really solid, compelling reason that is allowing you to kind of move forward in sticking with this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, we know that part of being a deliberate creator is that you, as you go through life, you say, I like that, I don't like that, I don't like that, I like that. We're selecting all the time. Well, this is a form of selection that I didn't feel in the past I've had available to me. Now I get to say, no, I don't like that self-talk anymore. I like that. I like the fact I can do that.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a good thing. So how about you? What's going on with you?
Cool. Well, I've had all sorts of really juicy thoughts over the weekend, and one of them really culminated, or I should say it came out of our week last week. I felt like last week was probably the most fun week I've had doing this show with you.
Well, and great.
I was kind of asking myself, so what was it specifically that made it so cool? And I realized it really matched the essence of who I am. Because I know we've talked in the past about how the show, you know, we want it to be entertaining.
Right.
And we want it to be inspiring, and we want to encourage. But I think last week, and I think we've been working up to it, but last week felt different. And I think all those other three components were there. But I think we've added a new one, which is thought-provoking.
True. Yeah.
You know, like, we were kind of on the edge all last week, you know, kind of talking about subjects that can be difficult sometimes for people to talk about. And I think people who might be afraid of negative press would have shied away from it, but we didn't. We embraced the topics and we went with it. And so, like, today's topic, which you're going to introduce, is really further on the edge than maybe we've gone before. And it really does meet with the concept of it's thought-provoking.
It's very thought-provoking,
you know? Because if we just stay in the entertainment and the lighthearted whatever, and we don't give anything to listeners that can help them really figure out how to shift their thinking, then, you know, we're just an entertainment show. And I think we're way more than that. So I'm thinking now we're at entertaining, inspiring, encouraging, and thought-provoking. That to me is kind of like what I think we've now added to the repertoire of what we have to offer our listeners.
Well, that's a good setup then. So let's get to it, because you're right. What we have been working on is very thought-provoking. And Cindy, you'll be interested because you and I have been experimenting a little bit with kind of just going with what comes to us. Wendy and I were doing that a lot last week, too, to the point where some of the time, you know, a lot of the time we didn't know what was coming out, but it just kept coming out. It just kept emerging. And it took us to some really wild places. So I suspect today is going to be no different. Today's topic actually came out of a Facebook post posted in that same group that we've talked about by a young woman who I'm not sure exactly where she's from, but she describes herself as an ex-Muslim. And she has been looking at Abraham and listening to Abraham teachings on YouTube and so forth, and seeing stuff in groups and on the Facebook group and so forth. And she sees what she considers to be a disturbing side to the whole thing. And she raised a question about it in her post. She found it very disturbing. She even, after some coaching, in a sense, coaxing, I guess is what I was looking for, she shared a couple examples that rather definitively touched on what she was talking about. One was a YouTube video, actually just an audio with a picture, of Abraham, a very early Abraham recording, talking about a rape victim. And the person who was in the chair asking the question was asking whether the rape victim actually attracted the rape, which, is a really, really sensitive and highly charged idea. And then she also pointed to a topic that had been discussed at a website called, I think it's abeforum.com, people who discuss Abraham Hicks, and it was about cheating spouses. And she found that very disturbing too. So it kind of in my mind, it worked its way into victimhood and blaming the victim and holding the victim responsible for what's going on, in terms of what's attracting into their lives, because that is a very, very difficult concept and a painful one and a scary one, and dare I say it, controversial, very controversial. So there we are. We're on, talk about being on the leading edge. Abraham talks about how we're on the leading edge. We're on the leading edge of leading edge right now. We're on the bleeding edge at this point. So Wendy, I'm going to start with you. This whole idea came, out of that topic. And when you read that particular post, you actually had a slightly different take from what I even just described right now. Maybe you've even thought about it some more, maybe even modify it a little bit more. But where did you feel like this person was coming from, and where do you feel like we need to go with this topic?
Well, I did read the whole post, and it was a very long post, and a lot of people interjected a lot of really intelligent ideas and very thought-provoking. But one of the things that I really, the way I look at this is in both sections, both of those questions having to do with the rape or the cheating spouse, you know, bottom line, Abraham did say, yes, the person who was raped, you know, did take part in that creation. Things don't happen, just happenstance. And the same thing with the cheating spouse, the people in the Abe Forum, they were basically going along with what Abraham's teachings are, which is we are the creator of our own reality. Everything that comes into our life, we are responsible for, you know. But I will say, here's my caveat to that, is that that is a really hard pill to swallow if that's your first introduction to the law of attraction.
Oh, yeah.
Or if you haven't learned more of the understanding or the underlying principles. Because there are so many different variations to how we attract things. I mean, granted, like attracts like, but trying to define what like really is not as simple as, you know, yellow attracts yellow or blue attracts blue. You know, sometimes, I mean, it's always going to be yellow attracts yellow, but how we define yellow may not be the same way the law of attraction defines yellow, because they can... Law of attraction has the ability to recognize things in a very different way than we do. And first of all, law of attraction is not a human being. Law of attraction is simply a mechanism. It's a law that's set up in physics, I guess. But it's not a human being that's pulling the levers, like in The Wizard of Oz, you know, where the wizard was pulling the levers. It's just a mechanism. And so recognizing what we're actually broadcasting is really the distinction that helps you understand how you've attracted anything that has come into your experience. And I will say that if I would have heard those things on day one or even year one of my experience with law of attraction, my eyebrows would have gone up too. And I would have gone, well, that seems like you're blaming the victim. But, you know, now 10 years later into my experience with law of attraction, I would never blame a victim, but I certainly understand how it does occur. And I think the kindest thing you can do for somebody who's brand new to law of attraction is to say, you know what, for right now, you're not ready for that kind of post. Ignore that. Don't throw all of law of attraction out the window because you don't understand this piece. You know, start digging into the pieces that you can understand, and eventually that will make sense. So to me, that's something you want to put on the mental shelf until you're ready for it.
Okay. So, Cindy, where do you sit on this one? Because this is obviously a really sensitive topic, and it affects a lot of people in a very real-world way. How do you see it?
It does. And I'm going to probably be the opposing voice here for a couple of reasons. And that is because we hear these questions a lot, right? It's like, okay, if an individual is responsible for attracting every single thing that comes into their experience, then did the Holocaust victims attract the Holocaust? When a baby, you know, gets abused or hurt, did that child, you know, attract those things? I've heard somebody say one time, and she was such a great teacher, but it was funny because her take was that she would not say that she agreed with the law of attraction. She said she rather would call it the likelihood of attraction or the tendency of attraction. I always like that. You know, in the same way that, is there a law of gravity? Yes. And right here on my desk, I have the most ginormous piece of rose quartz you've ever seen. I think it weighs about 25 pounds.
Oof.
If I pick it up and let it go, it's going to crash through the floor, right? But there's also airplanes flying over my head right now. And so they're transcending the law of gravity, right? It's like things are not always as simple as we want to make them and as we want them to be when we're first learning about this. So I don't ever blame a victim. We've all been a victim of something. We've all experienced victim energy at some point. And I don't say that it's to blame the victim. It's not my fault. It's not a blame thing. However, I might not be I'm never going to be responsible for someone else's actions because they have their own free will and they get to choose their behavior and their actions. So if someone does something to me, and I'm a victim in this situation, I don't believe that it's my fault. However, what I do believe is that it's my responsibility to choose how I respond to what comes my way. And so as far, and I'm really only speaking of things like this, right? Things that are painful. I believe that we have to deal with polarity. We've been reading in Money and the Law of Attraction, and Abraham was talking about well-being and, you know, not well-being, right? So well-being and illness or whatever, and that they're two sides of the same stick, right? If we want to pick up the end of the stick, that's the well-being side of the stick. Well, we live in a world that has polarities. We have health and we have sickness. We have wealth and we have poverty. We have two sides to everything because everything, and it's a hermetic principle, everything contains its opposite. So we're going to have experiences. You know, I don't believe we even came here to only experience the pleasurable and comfortable side of things. I think that we also came here to experience some of the painful and uncomfortable things because that's what contrast is. And we didn't come here to not experience contrast.
This is true.
No, I think we actually came to experience contrast for the purpose of creating new preferences because that's how the whole universe expands.
It's evolution.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
So contrast is absolutely necessary for the expansion of the universe, for the eternity to be in eternity.
Well, if we're all one, then we have a collective consciousness and a collective shadow as well. And we are going to experience what some of that brings. Just my thought.
Yeah. Well, I think you've brought in a very useful perspective on this. And I agree with both of what you both are saying. I think you've both brought some really excellent concepts into play here. I want to bring one more concept into play, and this is where it starts to get really uncomfortable. The whole idea of a child, particularly an infant, being attacked in some horrible way. I guess any kind of attack on an infant, no matter what it is horrible. But I won't be more specific than that because I don't really want to traumatize our audience. But when an infant's been attacked, how can we say, and to an extent I'm playing devil's advocate here, how can we say that that infant attracted what happened to that person?
Cindy, you want to go first?
Well, I think that we're getting into collective at this point. In other words, in the same way that an infant isn't responsible for getting itself fed or getting itself clothed, I don't think it's responsible for the things that happen to it, good or bad, comfortable or uncomfortable, pleasurable or painful. I think that that's when we start getting into the collective and that there's energy that affects all of us that's from the collective. It's from the people around us. And not to say that if an infant is hurt in any way that it's anyone's fault, as far as like, oh, that's the parents' fault. Or, I mean, I'm not putting any blame out there for anyone. I'm certainly not saying that the infant is capable of attracting it. I think it's kind of a case by case thing. And it's not even useful to determine, you know, blame, because when we get there, then all of a sudden we're playing the blame game. We're playing the game of whose fault is this instead of, you know, being on the other side of, where do we need to be to eradicate this, which I think is more useful. Stepping into the stream of, you know, energy that's a little bit higher than that.
So to me, from this perspective, I like to take a step back and look at how we have both on this call and then kind of in the societal thought process. Is that we look at things oftentimes from the perspective of whether it's good or bad, positive or negative. And to me, those are words of morality or words of preference. And that's how we sift and sort through life experience and determine what we want to do again and what we don't want to do again. But if I remove the words, the moral judgment out of things, and experiences, it's just data. Now, I'm certainly not trying to minimize human life as we're just data, but this is where I'm just taking a step back to just kind of introduce a new way to look at things, because this is how I really have come to look at many things that are explained by the law of attraction, which is things are not necessarily good or bad, but we as humans, because we have strong preferences, you know, we put words on things like a trauma or a tragedy or an atrocity versus something that we really enjoy. We could say it was a beautiful experience or fabulous and, you know, yummy and juicy and delicious. But those are human words that we use to ascribe meaning to circumstances. And so while I'm in this step backward, I'm also going to take a giant step upward and look from the bird's eye view. And one of the ways I look at things is how does my inner being, how does source energy view what's going on, both on a large level, like the earth level, as well as on a smaller level, like what's happening to, you know, a small individual. And sometimes I think we as humans, we're so close to things that we naturally look at something in a certain way and go, oh, that's a bad thing to happen. You know, a child who was, you know, was born with a deformity, or if a child is attacked in any way that, you know, and we feel like they're vulnerable and it was just a horrible thing, we ascribe negative words to it. But I believe that it is very possible, looking from source energy view, that it is possible that a small child chose before coming into this physical realm to only be here for a short time because there was something that that child knew before coming wasn't a child, but was a very powerful source being, just like we all are, coming with a very strong intention that perhaps in the way the child was hurt or died actually will rally many people to a cause in order to effect a greater change.
I'm glad you brought that up, Wendy, because that's one idea that has helped me so much. The idea of sacred contracts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was a book, I believe, written by Carolyn Mace. I never know how to pronounce her name. M-Y-S-S. Called Sacred Contracts. And I always tell this when I mention this, is that I had that book years and years ago when it came out, and I couldn't get through it.
It's a rough one to get through. I agree. I have it too.
Like, I kind of felt like I would do great in a class where I had a facilitator or something, but the writing was really hard for me to get through. But, and this is what's funny, is that the idea that I took away from it, I don't even know if it was actually the original idea in the book now, but the idea has helped me for years and years. And that is the idea that before we incarnated, we made agreements with other people that would also incarnate during that same time. And these agreements were sacred contracts. For whatever reason, we wanted to come here and experience, you know, certain things, including big contrast, that we made these agreements. And it's really funny. When I was in the second grade, I was a little, I don't know what to call me, but I was really into school and into work. And I was kind of a real shy kid that kept to myself. And I was in Catholic school, and the nun that was our teacher, she told the class no one was allowed to get out of their seats. And she gave us an assignment, and it was a writing assignment. And I finished my writing assignment, and I got out of my seat and went and put it on her desk, because when she was telling everyone to settle down, don't get out of your seat. No one's allowed to get out of their seat. And here's her assignment. And she was very stern and strict. To me, I didn't think it applied. You know, it wasn't that I thought I was special, but I thought she was talking to those rowdy boys that were making all the noise and jumping around. She wasn't talking to me. I was going to do my work and get up and go put it on her desk like we always did. And when I finished my assignment, I got up and I went and put it on her desk. And she jumped up and she screamed at me, didn't she tell us not to get out of our desk? And she gathered four or five of the boys, told them to go get the jump ropes out of the closet and to tie me to my chair so that I couldn't get out for the rest of the day.
Ugh. Holy cow.
So the girls were horrified. The boys were laughing and whooping it up and came over and tied my ankles to the chair legs and my hands behind my back. And, you know, here I was 7 years old. And I stayed in the chair for the rest of the day, and the teacher got fired. And in the end, because I went home and told my parents, who were horrified, and they called my friend's parents, who all said, yes, their daughters had come home and told the story of what happened. And so I tell this long story to say that at some point in my life, in the past, you know, couple decades, when I heard about the idea of sacred contracts, I was sort of meditating one day, and this is one of the first memories that came up to me. And I mean, not that I had ever forgotten it, but you know, it's like life goes on. It's not something I dwell on. And I thought, oh my goodness. So does this mean that, you know, before I incarnated, I was in that other space and I was looking for someone that would agree to do this? You know, look, I know you love me. I need you to do this for me. When we come back next time, I need you to abuse me as a child, you know.
Oof, wow.
I need you to be a nun while you do it. No, yeah, right. Way, you know. So I kind of made a joke out of it, and it helped a lot. Anytime I've gone through something where someone has treated me in a way that I just didn't think I deserved it, I'm like, well, I guess this was a sacred contract. What did I learn from it? Why did I need to experience this? But that's me taking responsibility for how I respond to a situation, which is different than me looking outward at something happening to someone else, right? Because that's right. harder.
But I'm curious, Cindy. And first of all, you know, I was horrified, like I'm sure many people who are listening to this are horrified by the idea anyone would tie you up. And the fact that you're not still in pain over it, you know, kudos to you mm-hmm. and using the tools that you have to not go there. But I'm curious, as you've kind of reflected on what happened, were you able to see anything in terms of perhaps what that circumstance was able to produce in a way that created positive change?
Well, and here's what I love about this journey we're all on together. And that is that we have to take the long view sometimes. I can't tell you that anything shifted in my life that week, you know, but mm-hmm. but I can tell you that I am a strong person who's not afraid to speak up for myself and stand up for myself and set strong boundaries, and that it's taken me a long time to get here. And when I had that memory, you know, when I had that, I should say not memory, but just that kind of aha moment about that happening to me as a very young girl and the sort of sacred contracts and all that, I thought of where I am now and what I stand for now and, you know, what I teach in addition to law of attraction is conflict resolution and communication and relating to people and nonviolent communication. And I thought, oh my gosh, it all started way back then.
Bingo. That's mm-hmm. what I was looking
for. Right. I was a little kid and that's where it all started. And so
the contrast you experienced was significant to the point that it actually began a journey for you of creating solid values that you wanted to uphold and teach and espouse. And I mean, I don't think that just the teacher getting fired was, okay, that was what it was for. But the fact that it has had such a huge impact on the character that you've developed within yourself, that's the kind of stuff I think about when I think of things that, you know, we think are uncomfortable as children. Like, what has it created in who we've become?
Right, exactly. And sometimes we don't know for a long time. You know, sometimes it's in hindsight that we look back and say, wow, like I did. It's like, wow, I can tell you, I write about things, I teach about things, and I often use examples from the past maybe 20 years of my life or 30 years of my life. But see, talking about that, I'm going all the way back to when I was 6 or 7. So I can recognize that even things I experienced as a child, as a young child, played into who I am now. And that's the same for all of us.
I agree.
Cindy, you also mentioned...
Go ahead, Walt.
Sorry. Cindy, you also mentioned something about, I can't remember what she called it, something like community rules or the nature of how the community is involved. And I was wondering, is that related to what Abraham has talked about in one of the books? I can't remember which one. In which they describe how, you're looking at a situation where an infant got attacked. How can you possibly justify that? How can you explain it? How can you say that the infant in any way attracted it? And Abraham makes the point, well, it's most likely they were in a house that was probably filled with fear or something very similar to that. I mean, what was the state of the mother or the father in that particular house? If the mother or the father are experiencing fear, and they're experiencing it on a significant level, stuff like that gets transmitted to the kid. I mean, that kids pick up stuff from parents all the time, and they can
right.
be positive things.
Right,
they
fear of spiders would speak to that, right?
It probably would. I don't know.
Saying,
you tell me.
I really don't have a true phobia, but I don't like to see a spider, right? And I'm going to jump back, oh, that spider. Well, where did I learn that from? I certainly don't feel that way about toy poodles.
I should hope not.
Right, because we had toy poodles growing up, and they were cute and beautiful and fun to be around, and soft and cuddly, and yay, they were something good. But my mom would freak out over a bee or a spider. And so I think I learned that at a young age, that that was something to be scared of. That was something to jump back and go get help for, you know? And so, yeah, I think that those things have to play into, you know, if everything is energy, and if me deciding for 10 days, I feel rich, and suddenly I'm noticing, you know, things showing up in my experience, then it certainly has to be the case that if I'm afraid, then that's going to show up as well. And yes, I think that the people around us, I mean, I've heard both of you say you don't watch the news, right?
That's true.
Right.
I told Walt when I was going to coaching school, it was a very long process of application. And one of the questions was, do you watch the news? And then the follow-up question, whether you said yes or no, was, how has this affected your life? And at the time, I never watched the news. And I said, no. How has this affected your life? I said, I've never missed a hurricane. Because, you know, I figured, hey, if I need to know, I'm going to find out.
Exactly.
And so, and so I think that, you know, why is that, that the three of us all, at least at some point in our life, said, yeah, we don't watch the news? Well, because we know it affects us.
This is true.
So
that's,
so yes,
that's totally the reason I let it go, because I just didn't want to let the what I considered unpleasantness into my mental state, because I knew when I watched the news, it didn't feel good to me. And what I now know is when something doesn't feel good, it means that how I'm thinking about something is not aligned to my source energy being. So I'm like, well, I don't need that. I'm working toward being aligned.
Mm.
And
well,
the
and
news
you were,
was not a vehicle to get me there.
You were saying a minute ago, like, you know, that as humans, we label everything, and we put these words, we make it good or we make it bad. That's one of the things that I do in all of my communication teaching, is that I don't like to label feelings and emotions, good feelings and bad feelings. I just always try to say it's pleasurable or it's painful, it's uncomfortable or it's comfortable, mm-hmm. because I don't want to put everything in a good category or bad category. It gets harder to not say it's, you know, good or bad when we're talking about an infant being abused. But I do agree that our level of consciousness is directly related to our lack of judging. And so if we can, like you said, Wendy, you said at one point, you said, step back. And the other point you said, like, rise way up and look down from that perspective, right? If we can step back and rise up and look down from a perspective of non-judgment, of saying it is what it is, and not labeling everything, then that can open up our consciousness and raise our energy level to the place that consciously creating what we want is so much easier. And yet,
I have goosebumps as you say that. Like, that is such an aligned thought. Kudos to you.
And yet we still have, you know, we all agree we don't want to turn the news on because there are so many things that are unpleasant and uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, those things are happening, but I see them all as, in the same way, I don't want to judge feelings as good or bad, because I think all of our feelings and emotions are valid and important, and they're all giving us important information.
Absolutely.
We've got the two sides of everything. I mean, and you know, it's the reason why we encourage people that are coming into these ideas of there being a law of attraction and that they can deliberately create something. We encourage them to not get attached to a specific outcome, because it's because of this polarity, right? Because an attachment to wealth is an aversion to poverty. An attachment to well-being is an aversion to illness. And once when we start being averse to anything, we cause more resistance.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to go to that place you spoke of, Wendy, where we're not judging things as good or bad, is really, really probably, you know, I think that is one of the top tools that we need to learn how to use as deliberate creators.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, it's like I want to speak on the topic that we, girl on the Facebook, you know, had found some things, like on the Abe forum, she saw somebody writing in about having a cheating spouse. And is the person who was cheated upon actually responsible? Well, I had some things, had some issues like that in previous relationships where I had a significant other cheat on me. And was it painful to me? Yes, I was just mortified. But at the same time, because I understand being responsible for my part of the equation, I looked at it in terms of, okay, if my partner is stepping out on me, what in me attracted that? What in me played a part in that? Now, I was not blaming myself. So here's the distinction as I go forward in this conversation, and this is not easy for everybody, but I do not blame myself for what happened, but I do want to pay attention to what in me created that. What am I vibrating to? What thoughts or beliefs do I have that allowed that to occur? And I definitely worked on some things and definitely found some areas where I recognized, oh, wow, yeah, I can see how I really, not that I wanted that to happen, but how do I say this? It occurring brought up some really paramount things going on in our relationship. And had that never occurred, we never would have been able to move through our relationship in the way that we did, because we were able to reconcile certain things. And so I don't look at the cheating spouse as it was bad or good, or even desired or not desired. This is what happened. I experienced it. I didn't like it at first, but then I owned it. And I got to tell you, when I owned it, I felt very powerful.
Mm.
You know, and I now knew I had a choice. I could stay in the relationship, or I could end the relationship. Or what we did, we negotiated new terms within the relationship. We found new ways of being together as partners. And so that's kind of how I look at almost everything that occurs that we as humans want to label as negative or bad. It's just a circumstance. That truly is, to me, where what is a perfect statement or a perfect label for something. Because what is a phrase that carries no judgment.
Right.
It doesn't carry victimhood, like you're just stuck with what is. No, it's like, this is just information. And having a cheating spouse brought information into my life in a way that it emotionally impacted me in a big way, so much so I couldn't just sweep it under the rug and go, no big deal. You know, tomorrow's another day. No, it impacted me. It got my attention. And so for that alone, I was truly grateful, because it got my attention to some other things that were going on in the relationship that really weren't in alignment, where we really weren't in alignment with each other. We needed to kind of redefine our terms and redefine what our relationship was about and what we really desired. Did we desire to move forward? And if so, how do we do that? And if not, how do we end it? So it was a valuable thing in my life. Now, again, I'll go back to what I said earlier. If somebody is brand new to the law of attraction and they haven't even yet been able to fully embrace that they are the creator of their own reality, then having read a forum where the cheated gets blamed for it, that's not an easy thing to handle. And that's why I say put it on a mental shelf. Perhaps you're not ready to deal with that yet. Because if you're not yet being responsible for your own life and you're still blaming others for stuff that happens to you that you don't like, you're not ready to take that in yet.
You know, I can't speak to the cheating spouse, but I was in a marriage that was abusive, so I can speak to that. Which is, you know, kind of can fall into the same category of having your spouse do something that's untenable. And the thing that I think was really helpful is that idea that you were just speaking of. And that is that, and it's not about a blame thing. It's about a responsibility thing. And so Walt's been doing this mirror work.
Cindy, before you go any further, I just want you to take a moment, define the difference between responsible and blame, because we really haven't done that.
Okay. So let's say that my neighbor has a bunch of junk cars that are all up on blocks and it just looks really terrible. And so I'm getting upset with my neighbor because every time I walk out my door, I have to look at this and it's an eyesore and I don't want to see it. So is it my fault that I'm having to deal with this? I can't change what my neighbor's doing, but I can build a fence or a hedge where I don't have to see it. And that's kind of a great, you know, boundary example, is that I'm responsible for my own environment and my own experience. And so when I was in a relationship where I was being treated badly and emotionally and verbally abused, what I recognized at some point, because yes, at the beginning, there was a lot of blame from me towards, you know, why am I being treated this way? And I always thought that if I would treat other people well, they would treat me well, right? It's kind of like, that seems to be the law of attraction. It's like, what I put out, I'm going to get back. Mm-hmm. So if I'm really good to people, people will be good to me. And so I was really good to everyone. And then this is what I realized. And I think, Walt, you and I have talked about this before with you're doing the mirror work. Mm-hmm. It's all about you're looking at yourself and saying, I appreciate you. I love you. You're loving yourself. You're showing yourself kindness. And what I was doing by staying in a relationship where someone was being abusive to me is I wasn't showing myself kindness. Mm-hmm. I wasn't showing myself respect. I often use the example is that if I had a new neighbor move in and came over to meet me and said something really mean and nasty to my child or to my pet, I would escort them out. I mean, why would I want someone to come over and say mean things to my little puppy or to my little child? Well, in the same way, I wasn't saying that it's not okay for you to say these things to me. I wasn't ending the relationship. I wasn't taking care of myself. And so a lot of times, or all the time, actually, I think our relationships are just a big reflection of what's going on within ourselves and how we treat ourselves and how much worth we give to ourselves. And so once we change that and start treating ourselves differently and taking care of ourselves in a different way, things change in our relationships as well.
Yeah, that's a really important point. And it actually points to something that I think needs to be brought up in the context of this discussion, which is when we talk about crimes and we talk about victims and we talk about who's blame and no, there's no blame where the victim is concerned, but there is responsibility and all this. When we're talking about this, what kind of gets lost in the whole conversation is that that's all focusing on negatives. You brought up the idea of community. I don't remember what phrase you used. I remember community rule, but I don't think that's what it was. But community thought, let's put it that way. The thought that occurs to me is, wouldn't it be great if a whole bunch of people, if large numbers of people understood just how powerful the law of attraction is, not just to the positive, but to the negative, and decided consciously that because they wanted to be good citizens, become good people in a society, people who contributed to their society, they wanted to keep their thought pattern in that positive place of appreciation of others and appreciation of themselves and staying in that zone, knowing that by all of them doing that, they are all contributing to a totally peaceful and prosperous society.
Well, that would be wonderful, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So I think we're contributing to that.
We are. And that's exactly it. And that's, you know, in the situation that I was in, see, I learned about law of attraction and all of a sudden, I mean, I was just creating so many amazing things like, wow, this stuff is amazing and powerful. And I'm just manifesting things left and right into my life that are great. So, hey, I'm just going to wave this magic wand at my relationship. If it fixed everything else, certainly it can fix this.
Absolutely.
And it didn't fix it the way I thought it was going to fix it.
Yes.
Right? Because what I realized is that I was allowing myself to be treated a certain way. So when I started saying, that's not okay, I didn't do it in a mean way. I just started making boundaries. I just started saying, you know, giving me the silent treatment's not okay. And speaking to me this way is not okay. And doing this, this isn't okay with me. And then he asked me for a divorce. So what happened? Well, what happened was that we were so out of alignment. There's no way we could have stayed together because I was in a totally different place. And the energy I was putting out was in a different place. It didn't match anymore.
Not to simplify your whole relationship, but just to extract one little piece that we're talking about here, which is the abuse in whichever forms that he was doing it. In a sense, what I'm hearing is when you first married, him doing those things to you, in a sense, were okay because you were letting it happen.
Well, that's the point I'm making when you're talking about forums and like cheating spouses. And we all know that this is a fact, is that many people that are with someone who is cheating on them stay.
Right.
And I know sometimes, especially for women, it's very difficult to get out of an abusive relationship. I know it firsthand. And I know that for all different reasons, it becomes a very difficult move to make. And yet at some point, it becomes our responsibility to take responsibility for our own experience.
So
whatever that means,
in my marriage, I was the ultimate enabler because I mirrored exactly how my mother did being a wife. So anything that happened in my marriage, I was the enabler. I was doing, I was fixing, I was doing things that he could have done, but I took them away because I'm like, oh no, I could do it better, or this is the wifely thing to do. Well, in 2009, I had this incredible epiphany that I was being the enabler. Now, here's what's ironic. I knew it, but now I knew it. So I knew it before, but now I knew how it was hurting me. I didn't know how it hurt me before. I thought it was a good thing. But now I recognized how I was losing out on things, and simultaneously I was robbing him of being his own powerful creator because I was doing everything for him. And I specifically said to him, once I had this epiphany, I said, here's the epiphany. I explained it in detail. And I said, I don't know if our marriage is going to survive my awareness of this. Because who I am is in the process of changing as we speak, because I can no longer allow myself to continue in these ways. And at the time, he kind of said, well, I don't see how that's going to destroy our marriage. But I think I had a knowing beyond what I could see. Because over time, what happened is when my behavior changed dramatically and I was no longer enabling him in any way, shape, or form, it became incredibly uncomfortable for me that he wasn't taking responsibility for his own stuff. And he wasn't thrilled that I wasn't doing it anymore either. So what's interesting is when we were first married in this way, let's use the stick analogy that Cindy brought up earlier. On one side, there's enabling behavior. And on the other side, there's being completely responsible for your own life behavior. And we were a match because he was okay with me taking care of everything. But at a certain point, after I had this epiphany, we weren't a match anymore. I didn't like the fact he wasn't taking care of his own stuff. But in the beginning, when we were first married, I liked that he let me do it.
Yeah, and that's so exactly what I'm talking about. Exactly.
Yeah, now we were no longer a match. And some women, and I know I was one of them, have a hard time reconciling with, well, what does that mean? You know, other people may now have gotten divorced over it. But for me, oh, yeah, because that was no longer a match. And I'm like, I don't want to spend the rest of my life being resentful because he won't take care of his own stuff. And in a way, he actually resented me a bit because I didn't let him do things that he really wanted to do.
Yeah, there's a key point right there. I mean, I know lots of men who would say, oh, I love being weighed on hand and foot. But if you actually look at their lives, and I've done that, I've had friends like that, their lives aren't all that wonderful. They'll tell you how wonderful their lives are, and then they'll immediately follow it with the latest fight they had with their spouse. And, of course, the first thought that goes to my mind is, well, if your life is so wonderful, why are you having a fight with your spouse? It just doesn't add up. But that's what so many men do. It's quite a thing. We have about 4.5 minutes left. I do want to do a couple of commercials before we finish, but they're going to be really, really brief, and I don't want to do them just yet. Before we get to those, let's try to sum this thing up, because this has been a very touchy and difficult and in some ways painful topic to look at, but a very important one. So each of you maybe take like a minute or two, and how do you sum this up in terms of the way you see it from your perspective? Wendy, let's start with you.
Okay. Well, interestingly, the way you just set this up, Walt, that this is a very difficult, touchy, whatever, I completely disagree.
Okay.
Because it's only that way if that's how you choose to assess the meaning. The way I look at it, it's just a topic. It's just information. We're just conversing, and it's a thought-provoking idea, and we're tossing around new ideas in order to empower the individual. Because when we stay stuck in the judgment of this is a difficult, horrible thing, it's much more difficult to pull it apart in order to really see what our part in any circumstance is, let alone how does law of attraction play in.
Okay, fair point. I think you have a valid claim there that probably I shouldn't be calling it a difficult topic if I want it to be easier. I think that's a good point, because if I keep calling it difficult, it's going to stay difficult. So this is an easing topic. How about that?
There you go. And that was my point. You know,
Cindy, how do you summarize what we've been talking about here?
Well, I think that there's no denying that if you've been in a situation where you have been cheated on, or you've been raped, or you've been abused, that those things for most humans are painful. And so, yes, it can be a painful topic, because we're wired for pain. You know, we just didn't come into the world only wired for pleasure. If I put my hand on the burner, a hot burner, it's going to burn me. And so we're here to experience everything. The way that I like to remind myself of with these kind of situations that may be painful is, first of all, that there are no mistakes. There's just human experience. That is a belief that I have chosen that has, you know, we do get to choose our beliefs, right? And that's one that's helped me a lot and helped me to recognize that we're all on a journey together, and, you know, it's not over till it's over. And so it's sort of like that idea of good luck, bad luck, who knows, right? The the proverb about the Chinese farmer that only has one horse, and the horse runs away, and the neighbors say, "What bad luck?" And he says, "Good luck, bad luck, who knows?" And a week later, his horse comes home with a half a dozen other beautiful wild stallions. "Oh, what good luck," he says, "good luck, bad luck, who knows?" His son goes out to try to train one of the horses and gets thrown and breaks his leg. And the neighbors say, "Oh, what bad luck." And he says, "Good luck, bad luck, who knows?" And then a war breaks out in the whole province. All the young men have to go to war, but his son doesn't because his leg is broken. And again, the neighbors, "Oh, what good luck." You know, that story, it sums up everything.
Because, I love it. I've never heard that before, but that's awesome.
Because if we look, we can take any instance in our life that's fantastic right now, and if we trace it back, we'll end up somewhere that was the bad luck part, right? It's just we're here to experience everything. So no mistakes, only human experience. That's how I sum it up.
All right.
I think that's a great belief. I'm going to adopt that one myself. Thanks, Cindy.
Okay, we got about 10, 15 seconds. Quickly, for people who are interested in talking with either one of you regarding issues in their own lives, Wendy, how do they reach you?
WendyDillard.com.
And Cindy, how do they reach you?
CindyChavez.com, CindyChavez.com.
And there you have it. Ladies, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it, and I think our listeners did too.
It was good. Thank you, Cindy, for joining this show.
Oh, I had a blast. Thank you for having me.
And we'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.